Truth and Justice is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are all things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
From NBI Studios, this is Truth and Justice, a crowdsourced investigation in real time. I'm Bob Ruff. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Truth and Justice. All right, so in today's episode, I'm going to kind of put a button on the work that we've been doing on Richard Allen's trial and the case of the murder of Liberty German and Abby Williams. This has been a strange several weeks that we've been working on this case because we're kind of doing a deep dive with the evidence that we have available, but it's not our case. It's not a case that we're taking long term. So a couple things I want to let you know on the outset. One, this isn't some long drawn out scripted episode. I'm just speaking off of some notes and just sharing kind of my final thoughts. And two, I just want to put any rumor or discussion about this to bed because some people have been emailing me and messaging me and asking me about this, and they've asked in our follow-ups if we're going to be taking Richard Allen's case on the podcast. And the answer to that is no. That is not what we're going to, that's just not going to happen. There are a ton of other media outlets and other podcasters that are deeply involved in this case that may or may not take up Richard Allen's potential or possible wrongful conviction. So we're not doing that. Also, I want to point out that the opinions that I'm expressing to you and I've been expressing to you are based solely on the evidence that we have available to us. I see so many people that have such super strong opinions one way or the other, both just listeners, people on social media, other podcasters, that are just certain with 100% surety that Richard Allen is either innocent or he's guilty. And I can't come to a conclusion like that because we don't have all the facts. So what I'm going to do today is I'm going to go through everything we've went through so far, the evidence that's been released that I have physically seen and analyzed with my own eyes, and give you the opinion that I have at this point, kind of my conclusion based on this evidence. Before I do that, I already know that there are a lot of you that, well, probably about half of you, they're going to be furious at what I say. That's because it seems to be, in this case, about 50-50 people that either strongly believe Allen is guilty or strongly believe that he's innocent. And so I'm just going to say this. If you're not open to hearing someone else's opinion that may differ from yours, with explanations, by the way, along the way, I'm going to give you explanations for how I came to these conclusions. I've been doing that for these past several weeks. Then just don't listen to this. There's no point in it. There's no point in listening if your only purpose, then the only thing that's going to make you happy is if I validate your opinion. It's just not worth it. It's not worth the effort. It's not worth your time. It's not worth my time. And that leads me to, why am I even doing this at all? You know, a lot of times, a lot of the trolls that I get on social media and the people that just come out just negatively attacking. And by the way, you guys have no idea. I mean, I've had people just this week actually mail a letter to my work. It was basically a Facebook post and a typed letter at my work wishing harm upon my children because I disagree with their opinion on the Richard Allen case. So that's the kind of stuff that I deal with on a daily basis. And I know for those people that what I'm about to say is not going to mean anything. But I'm just still going to go through the process of prefacing this by saying, I'm just giving you my opinion. And this is why I should have a script, because I kind of got off track here. What I was starting to say is, why am I doing this at all? Because a lot of those people that make those posts or make those comments constantly at me is, he's not an expert. Who gives a shit what he's got to say? And the answer to why I'm doing this and who gives a shit who I have to say, the answer is thousands of people. I'm covering this case and I'm looking into it, one, out of my own curiosity about it. As you guys know, I've been talking about it for years. This case is near and dear to my heart, and it's just one that I'm just very interested in, and I desperately want to see justice served. So that's where my interest in it comes. But also, I have thousands of listeners that are asking me to analyze it and share my opinion. Because for whatever reason, they value my opinion. It doesn't mean they have to agree with it or they disagree with it, but they just want to hear what I have to say. And that's what this show is. So you can save your, what authority do you have to talk about it? Anybody can talk about it. You can talk about it. I've tried to do my due diligence. I brought in experts along the way that actually have expertise in these fields to help me along, to kind of check my own analysis and also to hear theirs. And I've come to, I don't want to say conclusions, but I've come to an opinion at this point on what I think happened here. I also want to point out is, as I mentioned, I'm not going to be covering this case. I literally have no dog in this fight. So for all of you that are screaming, well, you disagree with me, so you must be biased, which is a classic response to people who just want people to validate their opinions. It's not a bias. In fact, if I ever had a bias in this case, it was that I want Richard Allen to be guilty. And the reason I want Richard Allen to be guilty is because I desperately want that justice and I want to see closure, if that's even a real thing, for the victims' families. If Richard Allen is guilty, that means they got it and they can try to start some of that healing process and move on. If he's not guilty, if they got the wrong guy, then this is, it's excruciating and it's heartbreaking. Whether they believe in Allen's guilt or innocence, one way or another, doesn't change the fact that this is going to drag out and drag out and drag out. And there's always going to be half the world that pays attention to this, which is probably millions of people in the true crime space, that are going to be constantly posting online for the foreseeable future about the fact that the person they think or they believe killed their loved ones is actually innocent. It's not a good situation, and it's certainly not what I'm rooting for. But my job, when I'm called upon by you, the listeners, or by attorneys in other cases, whatever it is, to investigate these cases and give my opinion, is to give my objective, honest opinion based on the evidence. And that's what I've been doing. And that's what I'm going to do today. And nothing I'm going to say here today is going to be surprising to anyone, because you guys have heard my analysis along the way. But I just thought for this week, it would make sense for me to just kind of package my thoughts all together, go through what we know about the case, and share my, again, not final conclusion, but my conclusion to this point based on the evidence that we have in front of us. So I am approaching this case in the same way that I approach any other case. First, I'd look at what was the state's evidence against Richard Allen. And whether you think he's innocent or guilty, you have to admit this is pretty thin, at least two out of these three elements. One is that Allen admits to being there at the crime scene. Two was the bullet found there that had a significant agreement enough that they couldn't exclude Richard Allen's gun from it. Those two, I maintain, are very thin. And the third are his confessions, which those are much more up for debate, which I'll get into in detail here in a little bit. So I'm going into this case looking at it from a standpoint of starting from the beginning, as though Allen is innocent until proven guilty. I've looked at all the evidence that we have available to us, and this is how I see it. So again, this is how I approach any case. Back at ground zero, first things first, I ask some questions. In this case, was Richard Allen on the bridge that day? The answer to that is yes. And how do we know that? Because when the police broadcast that they wanted to talk to anyone who had been out on the trails that day to come in and give a statement, Allen went in voluntarily. You have to keep in mind, and everybody will have different opinions on this, and especially when we get into behavioral analysis, there is no definite right or wrong answer. There's only the way that we see things. So there's certainly people that would be like, oh yeah, of course the killer would come back because they want to insert themselves into the investigation. I just don't see it that way. And the reason is, no one knew that Richard Allen was there. He didn't see anyone that he recognized. There was no reason for him to think that anybody was going to identify him. I maintain that none of us would even know Richard Allen's name if he had not volunteered himself and went to the police and gave a statement when he saw that they were looking to talk to anyone who had been on the bridge that day. He didn't even live in Delphi. He drove there to go give a statement. And like I said, that could go either way, and I know that people will spin that to fit whatever their narrative is, but I can only speak for myself, and for me, that's a point in the not guilty category. And yes, I know there are reasons you can come up with, but just logically speaking, I cannot fathom any reason that someone who had literally gotten away with murder, with no one knowing them, no one seeing them, no one identifying them, no reason to think anybody would, going back and volunteering themselves to the police. So for me, that's not guilty. And by that, I mean that doesn't add any weight to guilt. It's not evidence that I see as making Richard Allen look guilty. So then we have the next question, the big one. Is Richard Allen bridge guy? I don't know, and neither do you. And again, people are so dug into their positions on this case that they can spin that video to fit their narrative just like everything else. The reality is that unless you're a photogrammetry expert, you don't know. I've seen the arguments about the pants bunching at the heels, and that means he's short. I actually had a discussion with somebody on Facebook about this just the other day. And they were literally saying, well, you know, that couldn't be Ron Logan because he's 6'3" and tall people don't have pants that bunch around their ankles, which I laughed at because my dad is 6'3" and his pants are always bunched up around his ankles. It's just how he wears his pants. And in fact, in that conversation, I shared a picture of me standing with my dad, all 6'3" of him, with his pants bunched up around his ankles. So if you think that that is some kind of science and you've proven that that's got to be a short guy on the bridge because of the pants, you're just wrong. I'm not saying you're wrong that it's absolutely not Richard Allen or that it is. I'm saying you're wrong in thinking that you know based on that. It's not a reliable data point. The reality is we only have one data point to work with as far as the image of the man on the bridge and is that Richard Allen. And that's the FBI's probable cause affidavit to search Ron Logan's home. And here's the thing, as much as you might want to scream bias because this doesn't fit your narrative, it doesn't fit your conclusion that you've come to, I can only work with the data that we have in front of us. And in the FBI's probable cause affidavit to search Ron Logan's home, it says that Ron Logan has a similar build to the man in the bridge guy video. That was part of the evidence they used to get that warrant. Now, the FBI has some of the best experts in the world. They have photogrammetry experts. They have all the experts you can imagine. They analyzed that video, and then they compared that to Ron Logan, who is 6'3", and determined that the man on the bridge is similar to his build. Now, understand, I'm not saying that means, oh, it's Ron Logan. What I'm looking at and what we're trying to determine here is that Richard Allen? Well, Richard Allen is 5'5". He's very short. He's nearly a foot shorter than Ron Logan. So the only conclusion that I can come to is based on the only experts that have ever analyzed that video and published their results is that they think that the man on the bridge is similar to a 6'3" man, which to me means that person on the bridge does not have a similar build to a 5'5" man. It's that simple. And so for me, unless some expert tells me something different, which no expert has, not at trial or otherwise, I have to default to the FBI's analyst. They believe Bridge Guy was similar in build to 6'3" Ron Logan and not 5'5" Richard Allen. And while we're still on the topic of that video, remember we did several weeks ago a behavioral analysis of the video when it was finally released. I did my own analysis, but before I shared that, I brought in an expert forensic psychologist who works in law enforcement. And Dr. Shiloh came to the same conclusion that I did. We both believe that the girl's behavior in that video indicates that they had prior contact with Bridge Guy and some arrangement had been made to go somewhere with him prior to the down the hill moment. That doesn't mean that is absolutely what happened, but again, I can only work with the data that I have in front of me. I brought in an expert that has no bias in this case, and I asked her for her opinion. Now, I happen to hold the same opinion, and if we're both right, then the significance there is that the reality doesn't fit the state's narrative, or the narrative in Dr. Walla's secondhand confession, which we'll get to in a little bit. So based on the FBI statement that Bridge Guy is similar in build to 6'3" Ron Logan, and Dr. Shiloh's analysis of the video, this is another point in the not guilty category for me. There's nothing that I can see and no data other than internet experts saying that they know things that they really actually don't understand. Not an insult, I also realize I'm in over my waders on some of this stuff as well, which is why I bring in experts. But other than social media nonsense, I've seen no actual evidence that Richard Allen is Bridge Guy. Now, if someone shows me some evidence, some expert photogrammetry analysis that indicates that the person on the bridge is 5'5", then I would consider that. But we don't have that right now. All we have is the information in front of us. And based on that information, the evidence suggests that that is not Richard Allen in that video. So again, for me, that's in the not guilty category. Now, the next question is there anything forensically linking Allen to the crime scene? Now, I'm not going to beat a dead horse here, but the simple answer is no. No DNA, no hairs, no fingerprints. All we have is that unspent shell casing. And as loud and proud as some of you will argue that the bullet puts Allen at the crime scene, I promise you that if it were you or a loved one in the hot seat, you would absolutely not accept that that test, performed in that way, only to land on sufficient agreement of 1 out of 10 shells, and that one shell was fired through the gun when the control round wasn't, when the gun owned by the man who lived right next to the crime scene also couldn't be excluded due to sufficient agreement, and the expert conceded on the stand that likely any gun of that make and model could have had the same sufficient agreement, I just don't think you'd be saying, well, my loved one must have did it because it's his bullet at the scene. That's nonsense. The entire bullet controversy is nonsense. Now, it doesn't land in the not guilty column to me in the sense that it's counter evidence. By counter evidence, I mean it leans towards his innocence. It's in the not guilty column for me because it doesn't even come close to falling into the guilty category. It is literally nothing. It's meaningless. Truth and Justice is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are all things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Truth and Justice is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are all things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
So the next question I'd be asking, and I am asking, were there any eyewitnesses that said that they saw Alan with the girls or even on the trails? No, at least to my knowledge. Now, someone can absolutely correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding is that not a single witness at trial identified Alan as the person they saw that day. And no one said that the person was short like Alan, who again is only 5'5". So again, that one's in the not guilty category. For the same reason, just because somebody didn't see him doesn't mean he didn't do it, but there's nothing there to indicate that he did do it. So it's not guilty. So now let's keep going through the things that we've done, the analysis we've done. So we'll move on to the police interrogations. Over 2 hours of interrogation. Never an admission of guilt. Never offers up an excuse, nothing whatsoever as to how his bullet could have gotten there. Instead, he just continues on and on to insist that it is impossible for his bullet to be there. And as Dr. Scott and I discussed, he would either have to be one of the greatest liars of all time and greatest actors of all time, or he really cannot fathom a way for anything of his to have gotten on that crime scene. Detective Holman went through all the steps to corner Richard Allen to where he had no other choice but to offer an excuse to how that bullet got there, and he never did it. He just kept saying over and over again, that's impossible, there's no way, that can't happen, it's impossible. And as you heard in my analysis, these interviews landed firmly in the not guilty category for me. But again, I brought in another expert, another forensic psychologist who works in law enforcement. And he also saw nothing in those videos that made him lean guilty. And as I've done throughout this case, I default to the experts. So again, that's another point in the not guilty category. And the sad thing is, the thing that actually scares the shit out of me about this case is that that was literally the entirety of the state's case against Richard Allen when he was arrested. A bullet that could have come from any .40 caliber Sig Sauer. That's it. I said all of these elements land in the not guilty category for me, but they were never in the guilty category for the police either. No one identified Allen at the scene. The only reason they even knew he was there was because he made the trip to Delphi to tell them that he was, voluntarily. The FBI analyst didn't even suggest that the man on the bridge was even close to 5'5". The search of his house, car, and electronics revealed absolutely nothing. He never cracked even a little bit during the 2+ hours of interrogation. There was literally no case against him when he was arrested. Just a promise by Holman that he's going to, at some point in the future, prove it. Now, I know that a lot of you have really strong feelings about this case. But at some point, you have to take a step back and really assess if you're okay with a person being arrested and sent to prison, not a jail, but a prison without bail for 1.5 years based on a fucking bullet that in no way was ever even close to being proven to come from Richard Allen's gun. There is no arguing this point. Those are the facts. That's what they had on Richard Allen when they locked him up for 1.5 years in prison. Are you really okay with law enforcement treating people like that? Because I am not. That is so far away from due process and probable cause that it is terrifying. The fact that there could be a crime committed somewhere, and the police ask for anyone who had been there to come forward and tell them what they saw, and you do that, and then they find something at the crime scene that maybe could have come from something you own, and they lock you up in a prison in solitary confinement. Think about that. Really think about it when you're excusing this behavior. And that's honestly what frustrates me the most about so much of not just this case, but any of these cases, that people will get so hunkered down and so dug in to their own conclusion that they're willing to sacrifice their own morals and beliefs. Because the people that are defending this, I feel very sure that most, if not almost all of them, do not believe that this behavior is okay. And the only reason they're defending it or accepting it is because they feel they have to continue to defend their position. Nothing is worth giving up your beliefs and morals for what is and can only be an opinion. Everything I'm giving you today is just my opinion based on the little bit of evidence that we have. And no matter how strongly you hold your position, it's also based solely on an opinion about a tiny bit of evidence that you have access to. You don't know what you think you know. None of us do. I'm going to get off that soapbox again and circle back to the one area of evidence where I think there is a reasonable debate, and that's the confessions. As far as the bullet, there really is no arguing that point. They lied in the probable cause affidavit, saying that it was a match to Richard Allen's gun, and the expert admitted on the stand that it could have come from any similar gun. And it's not like this is some super rare gun and it was the only one that could have been in Delphi. Literally, Brian Weber, who lived right there, had the same model of gun and also couldn't be excluded. Just that small pool, they found someone else with the same gun. So I'm sorry, you just cannot argue that that bullet puts Richard Allen on that crime scene. You cannot. There's also just no arguing that there were not witnesses who ID'd Allen, or that the FBI didn't conclude Bridge Guy was 5'5". There's no arguing that there were no forensics linking him to the scene whatsoever. But Allen did confess. So from this point forward, I'm acknowledging and conceding that any of you could put a completely different amount of weight on these confessions than I do. Now, you just heard my take on the confessions last week, so I'm not going to rehash all of that in that kind of detail. But here's my simple take on them and how they fit into my opinion on the case. The only confessions that I can trust, and in my opinion, should have been allowed at trial, were the recorded phone calls. That's where we directly hear the words, "I killed Abby and Libby," out of Richard Allen's mouth. And some people cannot and will not ever get past hearing those words. And I do not fault you for that. I do not fault the jury for that. But for me, I spent the last 10 years studying false confessions and wrongful convictions. We know for a fact that false confessions happen. We know that because 25% of DNA-proven wrongful convictions have been cases where the wrongfully convicted person had confessed. It happens. There's no arguing that it does. And it doesn't happen as infrequently as you might think. That's a big number of, again, DNA-proven wrongful convictions. And the person had confessed to something that they didn't do. So for me, since I know it does happen, I can't just take for granted that a confession means guilt. I have to examine it to see if it's legitimate, and there's a process for doing that. And in this case, the phone confessions tell us nothing. There's no details. No when, where, why, or how. Allen is clearly in a documented state of psychosis. He's being forced medication. He's rolling around in and eating his own feces. On these calls, he's constantly saying things like, "I think I did it," or "What if I did it?" or "I'm confused," or "I'm losing my mind." Now, again, I don't fault people who insist that he said it, so he did it, but I can't put any weight into that at all. It's not guilty on that count for me, again, in the sense that I can't put those calls into the guilty category. They're meaningless to me. And the fact is that the number one thing that we look for in a confession analysis is, does the confession match the facts of the case? And in this case, we never get that. Even in Dr. Walla's secondhand story, which is the final element of the state's case, Walla presented an actual narrative, but does it fit the facts of the case? Truth and Justice is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are all things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Dr. Wallace said that Alan told her that he followed the girls with the intent to sexually assault them. Now, our expert's analysis of the Bridge Guy video was that she believed that the girls had had prior contact with Bridge Guy and had made some sort of an arrangement to go somewhere with him. So I can't say that part fits the evidence. I will, however, concede that that's a behavioral analysis and it's not actual fact, but that's what I have to work with. And it's also the same opinion that I came to after analyzing that video. I didn't talk about it last week because it wasn't included in the article that I was reading about her testimony, but Dr. Walla also said Alan told her that a van spooked him off. Now, that did fit with the evidence at trial, but it didn't fit with the original evidence. On the day the bodies were found, Weber told police that after work, he had went and serviced ATM machines after clocking out before he went home, which means he was not driving his van down the road at the time of the murders. But he changed that story at trial to fit Walla's narrative. And on top of the change, if it wasn't intentional, I also can't trust that he somehow remembers better 7 years later than he did one day later. I just can't square that circle. If right after the fact, he distinctly knows that he clocked out of work, drove around servicing ATM machines and then went home. And then all of a sudden, 7 years later, he's like, no, I clocked off work and I went straight home. I cannot accept that unless there's some reasonable evidence or explanation as to why that's different. But from what I understand, instead, what we got on the stand was him just getting very angry when he was questioned about it. And it was never actually explained. And on top of that, we also know that Walla was participating in online discussions about the case where the van theory was discussed prior to her testimony. And then we have the bullet. She said that Alan told her that he did something with the gun to make the bullet come out up on the trail to scare the girls into going down the hill. Now, in a broad sense, that fits the evidence. There was an unspent round on the scene. She says that Alan told her he did something with the gun that would have ejected the shell. Makes sense. But the bullet was actually found a quarter mile away from there, right next to the victim's body. Not up on the trail, which means that element of the confession, which again is secondhand from someone who is not particularly credible in my opinion, it doesn't fit with the evidence either. People like to gloss past that, but that's a fact. Her saying that the bullet was ejected up on the trail does not fit with the evidence. And lastly, I don't know how anyone can even possibly argue that Walla is a credible witness. She lied repeatedly. She got caught hacking into the DOC's computer system to get more info on the case. She was deeply involved in case discussions before and during the time that she was, quote, treating Alan. So if you think all of that is okay, I'm not going to argue with you. But I do not. I don't trust one word that comes out of her mouth. And therefore, I have to disregard her testimony about the confessions of Richard Alan. Aside from her integrity issues, the confessions that she testified to don't fit with the crime scene evidence. So even if Alan actually said those things and we knew it was recorded, or for God's sake, she even kept notes on it, I would still conclude that it was a false confession. There's just nothing there. So as you may have guessed, my current opinion on the case, and again, I say current because there could be more evidence revealed later, or something from the trial transcript that changes my mind. But my current opinion is that Richard Alan is not guilty. There's just no evidence against him. The one thing that I'll concede is up for interpretation is the confessions. But to me, they just don't persuade me, not at all. For all the reasons that I just mentioned and went into great detail about last week. So that's where I land. That's my opinion. You can take it or leave it. I would love to have discussions about it in the follow-up and even on the fan page and on social media. I'm always happy to have those discussions. When I'm not happy to have the discussions and I'm not going to engage is if people take my disagreement with their opinion and turn it into personal attacks and insults and accusations of bias. All you have to do is say, I disagree with you because I'm perfectly happy for someone to share with me the reasons why they believe he's guilty. But I just went through with you, to my knowledge, all of the evidence that we have against Richard Allen. There just isn't any. The bullet's meaningless. There's no forensics. There's no witnesses. The FBI analysis doesn't indicate that it was him on the bridge. The only confession we have that has any kind of narrative doesn't fit with the crime scene evidence and doesn't come from what I consider to be a credible witness. He was clearly out of his mind in the recorded phone calls that you heard when he said, I did it, I killed Abby and Libby, followed by, I think I'm losing my mind, I'm confused, what if I did do it, I think I did do it. Now, if you come to me and tell me, I believe he did it because he said he did it, okay, we can agree to disagree about that. But if you come at me with, he did it, I know he did it, look at that picture, that's obviously him on the bridge, that's just not even a discussion I'm willing to have because the FBI couldn't conclude that. The state police couldn't conclude that. None of the experts could conclude that. And I'm sorry, but you can't either. So I'm hoping that we can have some good and productive discussions about this case. And then for now, we're going to leave it behind and just move on unless more evidence gets revealed. A lot of what I do here on the show, particularly when we're between our big cases, our major seasons, is share with you the work that I'm doing when I'm not on the podcast and the things I'm interested in. And this case is one that I desperately want to see solved and I want to see justice served. And so there was enough interest there for me to dig into all this evidence, and do some analysis. And I know that a lot of you are very interested to hear my thoughts on it. Those are my thoughts. We'll talk to you guys in this week's follow-up. Truth and Justice is an NBI Studios production, co-written and produced by Erica Bergenham. Music for Season 15 is created and composed by Caden Ladislaw. Follow-up episodes are co-hosted by Janet Varney and Zach Weaver. Our logo font was created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design. Our website is created, managed, and maintained by Katie Ross of createdintandem.com. Thank you to our volunteer transcription team, Erica Cantor, Kathy McElhaney, Courtney Wimberly, Kate Wood Yomnick, Danielle Rohr, Jennifer Athey, and Caroline Dwyer. Truth and Justice provides all investigative and advocacy work for the wrongfully convicted completely free of charge. We're able to do that in large part thanks to you, our listeners, through your generous pledges on Patreon. Patreon accounts for the overwhelming majority of our funding. The number one way you can support our work is to become a patron at patreon.com/truthandjustice. For just $5 a month, you'll get all episodes ad-free, a bonus pregame episode every Wednesday, and also a video version of the Friday follow-ups exclusive to our patrons. Patrons also get to participate and join the chat live in many of our interviews and get early access to much of our content. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. You can also help us out by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. It doesn't cost you a penny and goes a long way towards making the show more visible. If you have a new case that you'd like us to consider, you can submit your cases on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. Just click on the case submission button and fill out the form. You can always keep in touch with us through our email at theories@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like our Facebook page or join in on the conversation on the official Truth and Justice Podcast fans page. You can also connect with us on social media platform X at Truth Justice Pod. And to follow our personal accounts on social media, I can be found at Bob Ruff Truth. Janet can be found at Janet Varney, and Zach is at Z to the Q. However you do it, stay engaged and stay in touch. But as for now, we're signing off. I'm Bob Ruff.
I'm Zach Weaver.
And I'm Janet Varney.
And this has been Truth and Justice.
Stop. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.